Hello, I'm Michael Pernfors, and this is Open Mic. Today, I have a Swedish tennis legend and an overall great guy with me, introducing Joakim Nyström. Joakim, great to see you. Great to see you. How are things these days?
Very good, thank you.
Well, good. Happy to hear it. Very disappointed that we didn't get to spend the summer together like we normally do in Båstad. Have some great golf rounds, but I hope we can do it next year.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, I wasn't going to brag on you off the tennis court, but I hear you got yourself down to a single handicap this summer. So
I've been working really hard on it also. I had 77 rounds, which is pretty good.
That's amazing. So
I have understanding why.
Yeah, I used to be like that about 10 years ago as well. So it's all going downhill from now. Don't worry about it.
Good.
Yeah. So, as we all know, you had a tremendous professional career. You also had a wonderful junior career. And I know kind of part of your story, but you got to tell us a little bit about your upbringing, kind of growing up in the north of Sweden and kind of having a little bit of a different regiment in how you got to practice and play.
Well, like you said, I grew up in the north of Sweden. Up in Skellefteå, a real hockey town. I wanted, like all the other kids, I wanted to be an ice hockey player. But when I was 11, 12, I realized I was a much better tennis player. The only problem we had in my city, we didn't really have a tennis facility. So what I did was I practiced mostly in all the schools that had a bigger sport facility, so I would practice indoors in the winter time, lightning fast surface. It was badminton lines, it was handball lines, basketball lines, and tennis lines. So I did that until I went to school 9 years, and then I decided I wanted to be even better in tennis. So I moved 2 hours south to Umeå. Umeå is also a small city up in the north, but they had a tennis facility with 4 tennis courts. So I moved there. I was 16 years old. I had my own apartment. I took actually, I could go with a truck. My mother worked for a grocery store. So this truck was going every Monday morning from Skellefteå to Umeå. So I got a free ride in the morning with this truck driver. I had a bike at the station in Umeå. I took the bike to the tennis hall, and there I was by far the best player in the north of Sweden. So I knew I was not going to lose sets to anybody, but I got to play tennis every day, which if I would have stayed in Skellefteå, there would have been no chance. And I played with different guys. Okay, the first team we had practice Monday through Thursday, we had in the evenings. But during the days, I found this guy. I had one teacher who had on and off. He could take off in the middle of the day. I also played a lot with one post guy because he stopped work already at 9 in the morning. He was working during the night. So I played with him. So I got my hours in. I mean, I probably played from normally in the wintertime, I played maybe 5 hours every week. This was a step up, so I played between 10 and 14 hours every week.
So when you say you were so much better than the other players, how was it your learning curve? Did you feel like you had to take care of a lot of that yourself, that you kind of had to figure out yourself what to do, or did you feel like you had the coaching and the help from the people that you played with?
I got some help from the people I played with. I mean, we didn't the club didn't have a coach was telling me what to do. It was more, you had to find the players to play with. And we were also talking a lot. Even this post guy who was early from work, he could play tennis. He was a little older than me. So my interest was, I mean, I would not have moved if I had the drive to become a good tennis player. Yeah. So for me, there was no other option than first of all, I was 16. I had to do all my cooking myself. This is before microwave, everything. So in the beginning, I had two dishes I could make. One was the canned ravioli that I put on the stove and heating up. And the other one was white beans that I was heating up and bacon that I was frying in the frying pan.
Wow,
so this what I was basically eating every second evening for the first at least 2-3 months.
So your nutritional knowledge is pretty much like the players today then.
Exactly.
But it did build a specimen of a player though.
Yeah. No, you're right.
Well, no, but I think it's amazing when you go into and you look at how different players, you know, how they learn, but also like you say, it made you have to take responsibility, if not only on the court, off the court as well. And I think that's probably, you know, part of the learning as much as anything is to understand how to take care of yourself when you don't have your parents around or a lot of people supporting it. So I think that's great. So figure then that you're one of the better juniors in Sweden. You're going to then start getting some opportunities and play with the better players. I know you played a lot with Mats and Anders and the rest of the Swedes when you get into your later teens. I talked to Mats the other week, and he said that the best practices he ever had was with you because you guys knew each other's game so well and you got along so well both and on off and on the court. Would it surprise me if you said that your best practice partner was somebody else than Mats?
I mean, it was Mats, absolutely. Like you said, we spend a lot of time together on and off the court, best friends, and it was long practices. It was not a lot of balls missed, and he was also a guy that he could adapt. I mean, he would, when we did drills on and off, Mats was a guy, he would never get tired. At least you could hardly see that he was sweating. He was running, and he was real. I would say he was really supportive of the other guys that he was practicing with. And I think it was important our generation because, okay, we were four guys in a team with one coach. We were discussing a lot of tennis or tactics or looking at other players and so on. I think we learned a lot from each other as well. Not only Jonte Sjögren, who was a tremendous coach, but we learned and we had the interest to look at other players, what they were doing good, what they were not doing so good, how to beat certain guys who came up just after us and so on.
Yeah. What would you say if you then, maybe it wasn't Mats or whoever it was, what did you consider to be the perfect practice for you?
Perfect practice was a lot of running, of course. We had a drill that I don't do it very often. We had a drill, we were one-on-one, 3 minutes without missing a ball. And then one guy get to rest and the third guy came in. So you basically played rarely 6 minutes and you rested 3 minutes. And this drill I do occasionally even now on clay, on the outdoor clay to get used to sliding and hitting balls back and so on.
Yeah.
So that was a drill we did a lot. I liked to hit a lot of shots when I was practicing younger, and that I needed to move. I mean, I would say I was a good runner, and I had decent condition. I was not hitting the ball the hardest, which you didn't need to do in the 80s, but I was a good runner, and we practiced a lot. I would say. This drill was specially made because this was the way we were playing the matches also.
Yeah. And, you know, we know, of course, as players that you had a tremendous playing career, but you also had a tremendous coaching career, coaching Davis Cup teams and individual players. Do you feel that as you, as a player coming in as a coach, that there were things that you saw in practices throughout the years that you felt like you needed to bring in? And now you talk about this drill, but is there other things that you felt like you had to bring that that would really benefit practices today that they didn't do?
Well, on and off. I mean, I'm a little fanatic. I want the shots to be there. I mean, it's more. You look at all the best younger players. They hit the ball so hard, and they hit the ball almost the same all the time. There's not so much variation. And they go after every shot, and I think I'm at least the players I had, I have a certain philosophy that I want the shot to look good. It shouldn't be that much of a difference if it comes to your forearm. It should look. I want it to look the same.
Yeah. Do you feel when you talk about the shot being, I guess, consistent and that they should know every time the ball comes to them how to hit it? How important do you think a defense is today? Because it seems to me that the best players in the world that stay on top in the world are the players that have the best defense, not the best offense. Or they have a great offense as well, of course, but that the good defense makes them such great players.
I think what you look at, if you look at players that you want to improve, if you can play in a high tempo, I mean hitting decent shots or without missing, you're going to be one of the top players. And that's what they're doing now. I mean, look at Novak, who he does not miss many, he doesn't have a lot of unforced errors. He doesn't hit the ball the hardest, but I mean, the last 5 years, he's been the most consistent because he doesn't miss, and he play in a high enough tempo without missing.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention it a little bit earlier there that you're now involved with the Good to Great Tennis Academy in Stockholm. So you are coaching some great younger players and some other players as well. But is it then enough to go in and tell these younger players that look at the best players in the world? Or is there another way for you to kind of make them understand that that's what they need to do when they're out there booming and trying to hit winners all day?
No, I mean, it's so different. It's all different personalities. And some guys that have the fire to you know, to work a little harder, to put in the extra effort. And some guys, you need to push the right button so they do it. So it's, I wouldn't say it's, you know, it's not one model for everybody. But I think as a junior, you need to have, I mean, we have a great facility. We have great gym. Everything is fantastic. And I think sometimes it's almost too good for the guys who are there. But then you see one or two guys, they have the drive, you know. They would probably make it even if they would have played in another academy or they have the intensity and fire to be a good player also by themselves.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you talk about you know, the intensity and the fire, and I know that you had that when you played. But you were one of the guys that I think you could see at the least.
Yeah.
Because you were so quiet and so settled into what you were doing that it didn't really look like you had any emotions at all.
No.
So having mentioned that, it'd be interesting to get a feel for. I consider, and I'm not the only one, that you were possibly the best player in the world the first 6 months out of 1986. Can you tell us a little bit about that time in your life when you know, you hadn't been out on the tour a tremendous amount, but I think you saw a lot of you had success for sure, but going into that year must have been very special.
Yeah. It was. I mean, I had a good year, 84 and 85, and I was top 10 both years. And then 86, I played the indoor tournament in Toronto. A smaller tournament, won singles doubles, went to, what was it, Miami, lost quarters to Landell, and then La Quinta, who then became Indian Wells tournament. I won the tournament without dropping a set. I beat, I think, Becker in the quarters, I beat Connors in the semis, and Yannick Noah in the finals. And from then, it just, you know, you got confident. In the end, I would say I probably overplayed, because then I played Davis Cup, I played Milan indoors, I played Rotterdam, Monte Carlo, Madrid, and so on. So when I came to the French Open, I played, I would say, maybe 25 more matches than I was supposed to have played. And I was really exhausted and couldn't really take the pressure of being one of the favorites. So I lost first round to Paul McNamee, who played a good match.
Yeah, but I guess you were strong enough to, a couple of weeks later, carry Mats to the Wimbledon trophy.
I was. Mats was, I would say when I played doubles with Mats, I was in Grand Slam. If I could carry him to the quarterfinals, if I could play well up to then and maybe steal a few victories, then Mats would be more interested to win the matches.
Okay.
And
Yeah. And I think that it's with you guys, I mean, you, again, I think you're always considered, both you and Mats are considered to be, and granted, so the great singles players, but I don't think you were given enough credit for how good you guys were in doubles. I think people know that you won Wimbledon, but I don't think they see your whole doubles career as what it really was.
Oh, that's right. I was 7 in singles, best ranking, and I was 4 in doubles. And even myself, I consider myself more a singles player than a doubles player. So yeah. You're absolutely right.
No, you had a tremendous doubles career. And kind of going into that, and the game has changed for sure. Singles players don't play as much doubles as they used to. But if we go back to a little bit, we're talking about practice and we're talking about playing in practice. How much do you think younger players would benefit from playing more doubles when they're brought up playing tennis?
No, I think that for sure they will benefit. They get to learn to move at the net, to play more volleys. But I would say in general, we are, even my workplace, we are not very good to let them play doubles. I know we had it up for discussion the other week that we should have at least once a week, we should play one afternoon, we should only play doubles. So I'm hoping we can pull that one through.
Yeah.
It's a benefit for all the guys. I mean, some of the guys also are, maybe in the long run, maybe they will not succeed as a singles guys, but you can also be a very good doubles player and make a good living out of it.
Oh, for sure. It's just to me, when in my travels and you see youngers play and they see practice and even when they play doubles in junior events, it's almost like they don't care, because it's almost like, well, they told us to play doubles, so let's spend an hour out here and then we can be done with it. And I think it's so disappointing because, as you just said, I mean, there's so much benefit that you can take out of, playing doubles and bring it into your singles game. So, Jocke, we're going to change speed here a little bit and go more to your own feelings about your own game. I would like to ask you, what is your most satisfying individual win, a match in your career?
One match, I would say, I played Becker back in 85 twice. Probably my worst loss. I played him in Wimbledon in the third round, and I served for the match against him. I think I lost 9-7 in the fifth. So that was a tough loss, even though, thinking back, I still felt it was probably my best cross court match ever. But Boris was the first time he played Wimbledon, came out of nowhere basically, and then he won the tournament. I played him the same year in the fourth round of US Open in a night match at Louis Armstrong Stadium. And then it was more pressure on him now, but then I probably played one of my best matches ever. I beat him in four sets to make the quarterfinals.
Yeah, it's to beat a player like that late in a tournament, that's very well done. I just want to touch on this because I hear it with some of the matches that I've played throughout the years that kind of our famous matches, but where I've lost and people can't quite understand how you can come off a loss like that and still be happy, because you played as well as you can play. You just lost to a player that played better that day. How do you look at that?
I was not happy right after the match, but
no, the first 5 minutes there, but to understand
you sink in, you get the emotions, you talk with the coach about the match and like I said, against Boris in Wimbledon, it felt like it was my best cross court match ever, and I didn't pull it off in the end.
Yeah, well, that happens. It's a game. So we now have your most satisfying win. This could be a question with the same answer, but the question would be: what is the best day in your tennis life?
my best day. I'm a big fan for team competition. So of course for me it was to first time I won Davis Cup. We played Germany in Munich also in 85 indoors, and I got to play. I didn't get to play singles, but I played doubles with Mats, and we won our doubles match. And in the end, Edberg beat Michael Westphal in the decider match. So that was probably the highlight, just because I like the team competition.
And I think that it's amazing when you talk to, and not just in Sweden, but I think in general when you talk to the Swedish players, how much they felt like the Davis Cup was such a big part, and to be able to get on a Swedish Davis Cup, and then like you getting to win it as well. I mean, it's a tremendous feeling. Lastly here, and you kind of touched on it throughout the interview, but what do you feel, in a fairly short answer, really made the difference for you becoming a successful tennis player?
I think I was, you have to be also a little lucky, you know, to really succeed. I won Orange Bowl. I was 17 years old. Was one of my, you know, I haven't been outside of Sweden a lot before that. I won Orange Bowl and I felt that, I realized that, shit, I'm one of the best juniors in the world. And this is a sport I can do fairly well. Also, I also feel that to then take the next step to be top 10, I think it had a lot to do with Mats winning French Open when he was 17 years old. Because I practiced with him for 2-3 years, or we were hanging out, and he wins the French Open, and I was maybe ranked, I don't know what I was ranked, maybe 50 or something. And then I realized, if he's not that good, the guy. I mean, he wins French Open. You understand what I mean? Yeah. Open. I gotta be top 10. You know, this is almost, you know, bull that I'm 50 and he's winning French Open. I can beat the guy in practice. And I think it circulated also for the other players that, wow, you know, if Mats can win the French Open, I gotta be able to win it. To start, I got to be able to win the tournament, and then, you know, take it from there. I don't know how you feel. I mean, you also.
No, you came... I mean, I think that certainly is something that you feed off of, especially if it's players that you play with and you compete with, and you feel like that you're right up there with them. That when they have success, that you can kind of feed off that. And I think that, to me, you know, having the college career and kind of coming out onto the Swedish team with you guys a little bit later in life, so to speak, at 24, I certainly felt that the companionship and the friendship, but also the quality of the tennis and realizing that, you know, you can hang with these guys made a huge difference for me.
Ah, good. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that very much, very much. Well, Jocke, I got to tell you, it was great seeing you. Thank you for this. Really interesting to hear your upbringing. I've heard some of the stories, but some of the stuff I heard here today was really fun to hear. So really appreciate it. And I know you probably not, unless you're traveling, you're not going to get to play too much golf here in the next 6 months. But I can promise you, I will be working on it so I can kick your butt next year.
That sounds good.
Hey, good luck at Good Thanks, to Great. Man. Say hello to the guys there and all the best.
Yeah, you too.
Bye. Thanks, Jocke. Thank you. Bye.